Good morning. Thank you for coming. We have a few sessions this morning here to talk about videographic entanglements, different ways that we work with video. I'm going to start with a little introduction to mostly to this journal. That's kind of the framing for the day. But I have a few preludes to make before I talk about the journal. Then we have a couple of really exciting roundtables, and in the afternoon, then there's lunch is coming here from Damascus Rose Kitchen, and then if you want to stay in the chapel next door, there will be screenings. Of course, everything that is screened is available online because it's an open access journal, but you get the different experience if you watch it in a cinematic mode in St. Luke's Chapel, so it might be nice. So let me get started. I want to begin with a couple of preludes, sort of framing for the day. I want to start with an acknowledgement that I've been developing, which is still a kind of work in progress, and feedback is welcome, but I think some kind of acknowledgement is needed. So I'd like to start by acknowledging that modern England owes its existence to ongoing extractive and neo-colonial relations around the world, and that the rights of the peoples colonized by this country to live and work freely here and to participate in the determination of its future remain unceded. Now, as the next framing, I thought I would go back to, this is just kind of the framing questions of the event, and of course we are not under any obligation to only address these questions or be restricted by them, but I thought it's good to start with something. The idea of videographic entanglements, which I've been thinking about for a while, audiovisual practice across disciplines, at a time of extraordinary challenges to the university as a social institution, on so many levels, we gather to discuss the role of video in sustaining our research practices and collaborations. So what are the methods and techniques by which we activate video as a form of thought and knowledge? How do processes of video production, editing, and analysis structure research processes and support relationships between academia and communities outside the university? Does video still have critical, decolonial, or even revolutionary potential through its displacement of logocentrism, and I'll talk about that in my talk, and its capacity for entanglement? Can audiovisuality point the way to more embodied and emplaced ways of knowing and living? What happens to video in a digital world that is increasingly defined by algorithms and platformization? And what is the status of truth and fiction, the documentary and the ethnographic in a time of rapidly growing AI image generation? I'm not going to talk directly about AI image generation. I don't know if anyone will, generative AI, but I do find that as someone working in video, the relationship between video and life is really being tested in new ways by the increasing potentials of this quote-unquote AI generativity. So I'm going to talk about video as a house of difference, thinking through the Journal of Embodied Research. And again, I'm going to say a few things about my own work and kind of work that is not directly related to the journal first, and then I will talk more about the journal itself. This is a still from an article in the journal. But let me start by saying that I come to video from maybe an unusual angle, neither from anthropology nor from contemporary art practice, which are the two kind of disciplinary formations that are foregrounded today. I really come to video, first of all, from live performing arts, especially theater and dance, and from critical humanities, new materialisms, and at the really critical race studies and critical gender studies. And these are not areas, in some ways, they're areas that are resistant, particularly performing arts, resistant to the use of video in various ways. And there's a kind of discourse in performing arts about documentation, but it's quite narrow in its concept of documentation. And that means I come to video in a sort of, you might say, a naive way or a kind of outside way, because the disciplinary formations that are most central to me, let's say theater performance and critical humanities, are not natively videographic in any sense. And so that's kind of has been my starting point of moving towards this form and realizing actually I badly need this form of video, and realizing that over the past 10 years. This is a kind of glimpse of my own video work, so none of these are published in the journal, but I wanted to kind of locate myself. This is a project that I call the Judaica Project that I've been working on since 2012, which is about diasporic and potentially decolonial modes of Jewishness. I'm not going to get into that today because that's an entirely different, massively important and contested and heated topic. But that is where my own kind of practice is based. And this was initially a theater practice, theater dance practice, performed in theater and dance festivals and as live works, based in a kind of song and movement practice, which then around 2017 became fundamentally videographic, as I realized that there were things that I wanted to get to in the kind of embodied knowledges and the embodied experiments that I was doing in the lab, the theater lab, that were not very compatible with the mode of live performance, nor did I want to abandon the body and simply write about the material. But what I wanted to do was really put words on my own body and have these kind of fragments of video clip that I could manipulate. There's a lot to say about this. This is a kind of collaborative methodology, and the video in the top right was not created, well, it wasn't edited together by me, but by Edda Erchin. And these are kind of Instagram experiments. But this is just to say that I'm looking at video in a way that is specifically a kind of analysis of embodied performance practice with a critical humanities framework. And then that has taken me towards areas of contemporary art and anthropology where I'm saying, wow, you have been working with video for a long time. What can I learn from that? And yet it doesn't always connect directly. There's also a critical framing that I have been working on for quite a while around this, and this is a book from 2024, which again, I don't have time to kind of deeply go into, but it is a critical race and decolonial framing of what's called artistic research or practice research or research creation or practice-based research. It is informed by new materialisms, but primarily by critical Black studies in North America, as well as critical Indigenous studies and some other areas, in thinking about the materiality, the racial materialities that are present in bodies and in places and in forms of research and in methods, and trying to really rethink the forms of knowledge. So for example, one thing that I had a slide in here, but I took it out because I don't think I have time. This section on white writing, which is to look at not the technology of writing by itself, but to look at the coloniality of the technology of writing, which is, of course, a historical phenomenon in the sense of the imposition of Eurocentric forms of writing. But it also continues to structure our reality in very fundamental ways. If you think about what is a law, or what is an institution, or what is financial currency, they are based not just in writing or inscription in a general sense, but in a particular forms of writing, that I would say we have to analyze in decolonial racial terms. I do that by way of arriving to a question about audio, questions about audiovisuality, and to try to re-look at the potential of video to displace, to contest, to reframe that logocentrism. And again, without going too deeply into it, I just want to touch on one source, which is the source of the title of this talk, which is Kara Keeling's work, a Black feminist film scholar who borrows from Audre Lorde this term, the house of difference, and applies it to the digital. Although actually in this essay, it's not just the digital, it really is the audiovisual that she's talking about, and the way in which audiovisuality potentially allows embodiment and emplacement and embodied and emplaced ways of knowing and doing to circulate. I think what's important here and what I want to underscore is that this house of difference is not at all a liberal multiculturalism, and the reason it's not is that there is no assumption in this analysis that the kinds of identities or embodiments or differences that meet within audiovisuality are meeting on equal terms or are in any way symmetrical. So it really requires this kind of unpacking of the what I would call the racial dynamics of the medium and of the form and of the way it's used, which is everything from it's everything between the camera as an object and the kind of idea of a work that is produced out of it, right? It's like, how is the camera, it's all the techniques in between. How is the camera used? How is it turned on? How is it turned off? Who is holding it? How does it circulate? What is done with those recordings? Who owns those recordings? How are those recordings edited? How are they shaped? And of course then, how does textuality come into that? So that brings us to the Journal of Embodied Research. This is a journal. I'll give you the kind of vital stats in a moment, but it's just to say that it's a journal that publishes video works. And so it has been for me a kind of second area. So there's my own work that I was just talking about, and then there's this area of the journal where I get to, because I almost never publish my own work in the journal. There's only one piece of mine in the journal. So I'm working with other people. And trying to develop a kind of sense of community, a community of knowledge, a community of practice around this notion of video, but in an academic frame. And it is in an academic frame. So it's founded in 2018, and we have been very lucky to be published by the Open Library of Humanities, which is a quite innovative and wonderful open access humanities publisher. So since then, we've had 11 issues, 47 video articles, 7 editorial video essays. There are more than 100,000. I don't know what these statistics really mean, but according to the Open Library of Humanities statistics, there are more than 100,000 views, more than 35,000 downloads. But the question for me that's really of interest is about the relationship between the form and the content. So we could say the content is embodied research. What does that mean? I think for me, embodied research always means something about gender and race and disability and the kind of differences and knowledges that we carry in our bodies. That's not necessarily the case for everyone who contributes. It's a very open interdisciplinary space, but clearly the notion that the researcher is embodied is at the starting point. That is, the researcher is not out of the frame. They are somehow understood as their own embodiment is part of the methodology. That's kind of how we phrase it. It's part of the embodiment of the researcher or researchers is a central part of the methodology. But the form in conversation with that is that we publish video articles. And basically all of that means is that each article that's published is a video file. One of the notable things about the journal that is, I don't really think is true of any other academic journal is that we don't publish any text outside the video. And this comes from the notion, this kind of idea of the house of difference and the idea of overturning the logocentrism of the academic journal. So I really didn't want to have videos with an external textual statement. What I have always said is, yes, use text. Of course, we need text. We need writing. We need words. We need discourse. We need language. We need the logos. But it has to be in the video. So it kind of flips the topology. And it says, you know, all of the metadata also is in the video. So that what we always produce a transcript, which is a very interesting thing on its own, because the idea of a transcript. I mean, a lot of my thinking about what video is has come from the process of editing this and making the transcripts and realizing. It's kind of the main realization that is underneath that book that I mentioned, that it is the act of transcription that determines what in a video is textual. It's a kind of overturning. Like, it isn't the case that in the video there simply is text, there are words, and that's part of the video. In a video, if you watch a video file, like when you go to transcribe it, it is on you to determine what counts as textual, right? And what I mean by that is, first of all, things like people say, this kind of transcription problem, right? Does that go into the transcript or not? But also, when you have a video, you have things that appear in the room, like signs on the wall. You have all this kind of text that's like floating. Is that text? Does that go into the transcript? What goes into the transcript? And so this act of over and over and over producing the transcript with these very different kinds of videos is very interesting. Maybe I'll just go right here and show some examples. This is 5. Now, of course, there are 47 articles thus far, so it's just a little selection. But I chose them, well, they're some of my favorites, but they're also just, they give a sense of the kind of wide variety of ways that people are answering the question of videographic form in relation to embodiment. And also, what I'm really wanting to highlight here is the different ways in which text and textuality appear. Now, some of these have voiceovers, and voiceover is its own mode of kind of logos, its own mode of verbalizing and framing. It can be very dominating, or it can be very kind of enframing, where you have the video object there and the voiceover speaks over it, but it doesn't have to be. We have voiceovers that are in epistolary form, like a letter to somebody. This voiceover here in the center on the left is very interesting because it's a kind of diegetic voiceover, because the person who's making the film is wearing a GoPro on their head and is speaking the entire time while working on this art installation. And so it's like a voiceover in the sense that it's a continual speaking, but it's not imposed afterwards. It's in the time that the visual part is recorded. So that's also very interesting to me. I mean, I think what I'm trying to get across here is I feel like there are these questions about the relationship between the different kinds of elements that can exist in this house of difference, and the kind of power dynamics between them, the ethics of the relations between different kinds of texts. Now here we have this scrolling text which ends up talking about Heidegger, but that's the only text in that video. The rest of the video, which I'm actually will screen later this afternoon, the rest of the video is entirely the GoPro footage with the person talking over it. Then you have other things. You have like subtitles, right? You have these kind of intertitles. Here you have on the top left this kind of durational event where you have a figure in the distance appearing at different times. And of course these things can appear in different ways. Like some of these maybe would also work well in a film festival. Some of them have been exhibited, like this one in an art gallery. But I think it's very interesting for me to hold them together in the space of a journal and to say, here these things sit. One of the reasons why the journal is a little bit methodologically narrow, in the sense that we haven't done multiple video files, or kind of trying to keep it a little bit simple formally, is in order to really rigorously ask these questions about form and the forms of knowledge. So I just really want to make one more point, share one more thing, which is this particular issue, 4.2, which I edited as the kind of, I shaped it and I put a special call out for it. And there's something here that I want to offer that I still find really interesting and I would like to explore more and see taken up more, which is this notion of illuminated video, where what I asked people to do was to take an uncut piece of video that they had, so something that had been recorded and that had not been edited at all, and that they were not allowed to edit it, and they were not allowed to put a voiceover, they're not allowed to do anything to it except annotate it with text on screen. And for me, again, this kind of gets to the idea of like, that we want the textuality, but what if the textuality, what if we reverse the topology of the illuminated manuscript? So instead of having this textual work, which then gets these visual illustrations or illuminations, what if it were the other way around, that the work is audiovisual, it cannot be altered, but it can be illuminated? And people had different ways of putting the text on screen, different kinds of text, things appearing. But there's something that I really find interesting about and valuable about the temporality of this, where they weren't allowed to break the temporality of the audiovisual document. And these are the short ones. This is the first article in that issue is 6 illuminated videos. These were the shortest ones. So they range from 2.5 minutes to 7 minutes. And there's other pieces in that issue that are much longer. But just juxtaposing these, there's something that's really interesting to me about the audiovisual material coming to the foreground, and of course coming out of performing arts, this notion of keeping the temporality, that it doesn't get to be edited. If it took 2.5 minutes, it took 2.5 minutes. If it took 7 minutes, it took 7 minutes. But then you get to have your kind of critical humanities perspective and put things on it and say, this, and it could be a citation, it could be a question, a challenge, an association to something else. Step 4 we have, you know, and some of them are very much like, this is what I did, and some of them are much more kind of poetic engagements, but always the text is in this kind of annotative or illuminating mode in relation to the audiovisual material. So that's the introduction, and I managed to do it in 20 minutes, so if maybe there's some questions or things that we could go into more a little bit here. So we don't have any kind of overall discussion period in the day, but I think that each of the 3 sessions, we will hopefully leave at least 10 minutes or a little bit more for open conversation, it would be great to have some sense of like how the room is feeling about these questions and issues.
I'm curious about the material that you didn't include because you thought you would have the time.
You're right. I have the time. Okay. Let's see. It should be in draft two. So basically, there were two things that I didn't include. They are both quotations from this book. So what I thought I would go into if I had time, which maybe I can now do, is the notion of white writing. I kind of touched on it, but here are a couple of the citations. So this is from the section on white writing. The financial instrument or currency, the bureaucratic form to be filled out, the census or survey, the quote-unquote logical argument, and above all, the law, including the written constitutions, legislations, and policies that found and structure governing states. I mean, part of the point is that we kind of cannot imagine a institution like a university, let alone a nation state, a state, that it doesn't have as its founding structure written document. It's just one example, but it's an example of how unimaginable, how much our world is still structured by a certain particular notion of what writing is and what it does. So in coining the term white writing, I am, of course, not positing a technological determinism as if writing were to blame for colonialism. Rather, white writing names the inextricability of the technology of writing from the construction of whiteness through colonialism. And although video is not the only medium by which white writing can be decentered, it does offer profoundly new ways of decentering writing because of how audiovisuality functions as a third modality that triangulates and reveals the asymmetries of a series of binaries that I argue are more or less artifacts of the technology of writing. So what I argue in this section is essentially that the many of the binaries that we still find ourselves, I mean, endlessly in areas of academia that deal with embodiment or video or art, endlessly talking about theory and practice or mind and body, these kinds of things. And I want to suggest that the theory term, theory, mind, thought, philosophy, knowledge, rationality, there's a whole list of terms which I would like to productively deflate by reading them all as writing or artifacts of writing and simply saying, because I think so much of what we mean by knowledge and thought and theory and ideas and concepts and is actually, it's not something that gets written down. It's something that exists in the way it exists because of how deeply embedded certain uses of writing are. And that's what I call white writing. So that allows video to come in and triangulate that. I'll just touch on this last one. This is actually the end of the book. It's the last paragraph in the book. Audiovisuality, as Kara Keeling suggests, can be a house of difference more capacious than even the most poetic or deconstructive textual forms. I'm not going to fight anyone if they want to say that the textual form can be even more capacious, but it's just a point, right? But there is no easy refuge in audiovisuality. The moment that audiovisuality is treated as mere technology, which is kind of what I'm sort of hoping we will wrestle with today, how to not treat it as mere technology, it is made implicitly white and can then join with white writing to solidify and extend white institutionality, further colonizing life and earth. What is urgently necessary, therefore, is to extract audiovisuality, writing, and institutionality itself from whiteness, restoring to them their histories and materialities of racialization. Only in this way can the forms of knowledge be reopened, which is kind of my provocation. That's the last part of the book. Yes?
Can you say maybe a little bit about the chapter, What is the Song?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to, yeah. Oh, my God. So as I was mentioning, my work on video really comes out of a song-based performance practice. My most intensive training is in post-Grotowskian forms of theater. I lived in Poland for 2 years, and I've worked with some of the kind of people who are... I never met Grotowski, Jerzy Grotowski, Polish person, but I worked with many people who worked with him. And so coming out of that... I took with me this huge riddle about like what is this song work practice that is so, it seems so important to me and yet I don't know really how to name it. And there's a section here also about Grotowski's White Exit. But the What is a Song section is in conversation with Dylan Robinson's work, among others, Hungry Listening. I don't know if you know that, but it's a book on indigenous sound studies based in North America. And it's kind of looking at, again, the forms of knowledge. But the kind of the question of like what is a, using the notion of a song to track across forms of knowledge and to say, because the way I learned it from Grotowski is the people who followed Grotowski is very similar to what Dylan Robinson talks about when he talks about indigenous relationships to song, which is that a song is a kind of living being because it is a part of yourself. So like if I know a song, that means there's some, the song is in me. So in the same way that I have a hand and I have, you know, my body, I also have a song, although it can't be anatomized in the same way. I can't locate it. I can't say here, it's over here. But it's in me in a similar way, so it's part of my embodiment. And then, of course, you have a Western musical notation, logocentric, I would say white writing mode of song, which is, you know, there's a book called Song and Philosophy, which starts by saying, song is when you have a text with a melody. And it's like, oh, okay, you love writing. You have, so you made actually two forms of writing, and when you combine them, that's for you a song. And then, of course, audio ontologies, which are really important in critical Black studies, Catherine McKittrick's work and Alexander Wahelier on audio ontologies of song, and then audiovisuality of song, which I don't really say a lot. I mean, it's a really interesting thing, but then I go into my own kind of audiovisual works on song. So I think a song is just something that for me is really amazing to think across the different forms of knowledge and how profoundly different you think a song is if you think of it as that which is captured by a dual form of notation versus if you think of it as like a chunk of your habitus versus if you think of it as something seen in a video. Like, these are all very different notions of what a song is.
So something about
Grotowski's white exit. Oh, yeah. Well, this whole chapter is grappling with whiteness and the racialization of knowledge and starts from white writing and then tries to grapple with areas of what I end up calling critical whiteness practice as in conversation with critical whiteness studies, basically. So I'm trying to look at practices that, I guess for lack of a better way of saying it, practices that are not necessarily explicitly engaged with a critical whiteness studies paradigm. So they don't think of themselves as deconstructing whiteness. But when I look at them now and I'm like, why do I think this practice is valuable? And yet I feel it's not really articulating itself well enough. Ah, I think it's deconstructing whiteness, but it doesn't really know that, is what I think. And I think that's true of a lot of somatics practices. I think it's true of just a lot of theater and dance practices, especially experimental theater and dance practices, that they, you know, and the risk is if they don't engage with a critical whiteness perspective, if they don't engage seriously with critical Black studies and critical Indigenous studies, then they think that they're doing more than they are because they think they're doing universal things. So I'm constantly having this conversation. The white experiment section is about artistic research and practice research. I'm constantly having this conversation with like PhD students and postdocs and senior researchers where people are talking about like my research is on like time, or my research is on materiality, or my research is on ecology. And I'm like, you mean deconstructing white approaches to that, right? Because you're in this massively white institution and your entire project is framed by the white institutionality of European research institutions. So clearly when you say you're deconstructing time or you're working with time or ecology, you mean you're trying to unmake the deeply sedimented whiteness of the situation that you find yourself in, right? But often, you know, the response is like, I never thought of it that way. No one has ever spoken to me about race. What does race have to do with it? Because, you know, for all the reasons that we know. So that's the chapter on Grotowski is my reading of Grotowski. In that context, Grotowski has not been written about as a critical whiteness practice. But if I look at my own journey with his work over 10, 15 years and like why it was so important to me, but also not just mine, if you look at what he was doing, the kinds of embodied knowledges he was cultivating, the kinds of people he was working with and treating as very, very knowledgeable, and what he was offering to students, it's all a deconstruction of whiteness in a long lineage, you know, in a lineage from Rousseau and in a lineage of kind of like, wait a minute, this modernity thing, it's not working. There's something really, really messed up about the relationship to the earth and the relationship to each other and the kind of intersubjectivity that we're living. But none of those people name it whiteness, obviously, but that's what I think we should do now. Yeah, okay, last question.
Yeah, so
Why did you call it a journal with issues? I mean, that's a very bookish way of organizing something visual.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. So in that section on white experiments, which is about different approaches to artistic research or research creation, practice research, I'm kind of ending up, because I have I'm offering a little bit of a critique of some of the approaches to that foreground and strongly emphasize their escape, their kind of total escape from the institution. And I'm ending up more in a place of more like a kind of wrestling with the institution, like a kind of experimenting with the institution, particularly a formal experimentation. And I'm interested in looking for leverage points. So I think when I look at the university, for example, there's a number of different leverage points that one could kind of grab, like what is a book, what is an article, what is a conference, what does a PhD thesis look like? And for me, it's quite interesting, it's quite useful, it can be useful to kind of grab a leverage point that's an institutional object, but then do it in a way that you quite contradict what it is. So I've really found it valuable to say, not just to say, but to have it be a journal, to have it has all of the kind of structure of a journal. It has DOIs, it has the archiving, the clocks archiving of all the materials, it has the peer review system. So the whole system is there. And yet the content is audiovisual, which in a way constantly threatens to break those systems, and yet it's constantly in negotiation. There are plenty of other examples that are much farther removed from academic structures. I mean, even the research catalog, the Journal for Artistic Research, is kind of a further step in terms of its nonlinear layout. And then, of course, there's plenty of artist websites and different kinds of curated things, digital forms, but I wanted to be closer to the institution. I wanted to have this kind of intimate relationship of wrestling and to really arrive there. It's the same reason I'm in Oxford now, right? Is you want to kind of arrive there with something that is unexpected and say, but what about, I call it leverage because it's kind of like, it's just a small change. You know, it's a journal. It's entirely a journal. It's just this one change. But then if that change goes on and if it lives, actually, it kind of builds a potential to overturn something much larger. That's my own approach. Thank you. Thank you. We'll now have a little